This is the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast.
So a lot of people were like, well, what makes your product better than, you know, this other product? And this other product might be cheaper. So I was fine with educating people because I think the most important thing that a business can do is educate their customers.
You're listening to the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast, where we discuss tangible tips, tricks, and best practices for becoming financially free. The show is designed for people who want to either start real estate investing or for those who want to scale their real estate business.
What's up, guys? This is Jonathan Farber, host of the Millennial Millionaire Through Real Estate podcast. This show is all about achieving financial freedom as fast as possible so you can do whatever makes you happy in life. For me, that vehicle was real estate, and it's how I achieved financial freedom at 27. If you want to know how I got started, my journey is presented in a YouTube video posted in the show notes, and I post daily in our private Facebook group about my favorite topics and day-to-day strategies. I appreciate you guys being here, and let's get started. Oh, by the way, reach out if you ever need help. I try to keep my calendar open to talk to anyone that needs it or has any quick questions. See you guys. Talk to you later. What's going on, guys? Today we have an awesome episode with Justin Silvero. Justin is a second time podcast guest. I don't even remember when the first one was. It had to be at least a year ago when he was about to go on a cross country road trip with his family for like 6 months. But anyway, that's part of his story because he's built a business that can run without him. And we talk about that a lot on the show. Justin is from Boston originally, still lives there. Runs a very successful business that helps wholesalers and flippers and real estate investors in general market to their end buyers and to find off-market leads. So it's called open letter marketing. And what it does is basically help people make campaigns to find off-market properties through direct mail, calling, texting, emailing. There's also a CRM with it. But he started first as a real estate investor, actually to understand the needs of real estate investing and also understand the needs of real estate investors to have a tool that they could use and manage their business with every day. And what we talk about a lot on this episode was how he then took that, grew it. It was extremely successful and now has started working on a second project, a software company that is also tailored to real estate investors, but more now to streamline, train, and connect them with other investors to get smarter with running their business, have better workflows, better campaigns, better automations, and basically just have a system instead of just sending direct mail. And he was doing that a little bit already, but now has expanded it into this. And it's really exciting to see what it's going to come out to in a couple months. It's not out yet. We talk about his thought process in building it, in building software, and hiring a team and finding kind of a mentor and someone that was going to come along and work with him on the project. It's really cool how he found the person that kind of ended up being his advisor in the company. And just that is part of the main learning of the episode today, but it was really cool. But the main learning that I took from the show was hiring the right people is everything. And the difference between those that are successful and not in business. If you hire the right team, they can take you to a level that you would never be able to do yourself. I used to think of that expression, hopefully I don't butcher it. If you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go with others. And I used to think that meant that you had to partner with people. But what that expression can also mean is you're hiring people that can help with things that you're not good at. So he's not a developer. He hired developers. He's not so focused on, let's say, marketing. He hired marketers. And he also found someone that could be like a paid consultant or advisor to his new company and also make tons of connections for that company. So it's amazing to hear his trajectory and what he wishes he would have done earlier in his career regarding hiring the right people. The tactical tip for today is we're talking about marketing strategies a lot on this show, but the tactical tip is this: picking a marketing strategy and just committing to it for 90 days starting today. I know that doesn't sound as fun as watching more podcasts or YouTube videos, but just drill down. Even if you pause this episode and just go pick a marketing strategy right now. You pull a list from open source or I'm drawing a blank on it, but we'll post it where you guys can pull lists from or from Envelo, what Justin uses. Pull a list and start marketing to that list one way for the next 90 days. If it's calling, great. Texting, great. Direct mail, awesome. Whatever it is, just double down on it and only do that for the next 90 days. And I guarantee if you stay consistent, you will find a lead. And if you find a lead, or multiple leads, there's a good chance you'll find a deal. So that's today's tactical or tangible tip. And without any further ado, let's get into an awesome episode with Justin Silvero. All right, Justin, what's going on, man? Welcome back to the podcast. How are you?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for having me back on. I appreciate it.
You got it, dude. We were talking about this before, that this may be one of the last type of shows like this for a while. And I was thinking back to, we'll post it in the show notes of the first episode, but it had to be over a year ago, man, because you were about to go on basically a cross country trip. It was still like the deep throes of COVID. Who knows where we're at with it again now. It's so crazy. But this is your second time on, man. But yeah, I feel like you've done so much even since we last spoke. So I definitely want to get to that. But for those that didn't hear the first episode, or, you know, may have seen your name but not sure exactly what you do, you mind just giving a quick blurb, kind of update or catch up on maybe where things have been, or, you know, what it was our last conversation was more focused on, and then we'll catch up on new stuff.
Yeah, that sounds good. So just to give some background on who I am, I'm up in the Boston area. So I'm on the East Coast. I've been in real estate since 2011, doing a lot of wholesales, rehabs, new construction, condo conversions in the city of Boston. So dabbled in just about a little bit of everything. In 2016, I started a marketing company called Open Letter Marketing, because I saw there was a huge void in the market for really good direct mail. And that's essentially how I was picking up all my deals and doing it much better than my competition. So I wanted to offer the market with something completely different and really good strategy behind direct mail marketing. So Open Letter Marketing started in 2016. It's grown considerably over the last, 5 years or so. We just got on Inc. 5000 lists this year, which was super cool.
That's awesome.
So that was really nice. And over the last 2 years or so, I've really been working on a new business, a software platform. And that's really because I saw there was a huge void in the market again for investors to really understand how to market and run their sales pipeline properly. And I wanted to create a really good flow and platform to help people do that and embed best practices, lots of education, and really make it intuitive. So it's nice and easy to move across your sales platform.
That's awesome. I didn't even know you were doing that, but
yeah,
I feel like what you've done, and I remember this from like the first part of the conversation, was kind of just look for gaps in where other people aren't really focusing, or if they are, it's just like clunky or like a bad system, and like, you know, kind of just go into that. So maybe, can you just talk about like the progression of that, of how you got into like Open Letter Marketing first, but then, you know, how you started thinking about transitioning into the next business and starting that?
Yeah, sure. So again, for me, it's like just looking at a need in an industry. And because I was in real estate and investing for a long time, I just happened to pick up direct mail because I was working full time for about 5 years while investing. So I didn't have much time to do marketing. So I needed to automate things. And then when I looked out and saw what other vendors there were and what type of marketing that they provided, everybody offered the same thing. Like the yellow letter was like the biggest thing. And there was nothing outside of the box to really increase response rate or do something different than your competition. So I said, you know what, I'm going to take this in-house. And my wife and I like started creating, you know, our own letters, and we were sending them out, and we tried different strategies. We tried different envelope types, messaging, to really figure out how to, you know, create a great strategy for direct mail. So once we started to do that, I tested what I was doing against yellow letters to see how much more effective mine was, if it was at all. And what I found through that test was that I was 26.7% more effective. I got more response rates over yellow letters. So I was like, well, that's pretty cool. And at the time, I blogged for about my first 5 years, just on all my deals that I was doing, how I was finding them, the numbers, videos, all that stuff. And I started to mention that I was doing a lot of direct mail, and people were asking like what my strategy was and how I was doing it. So I was sharing a lot of that stuff. And people said, well, can you do this for us? Because like, we don't have time to like create all this. So I started thinking about it. And that was at the time that I was actually going to leave my day job. And I said, you know what? I think I naturally always have to have two things going at once. I can never just focus, like do one thing, which is good and bad. But then when I left my day job, like a week later, I launched Open Letter Marketing. And really, we're focused on helping other investors create marketing, and we're not just order takers. We want them to understand the strategy behind it. So a lot of people were like, well, what makes your product better than, you know, this other product? And this other product might be cheaper. So I was fine with educating people, because I think the most important thing that a business can do is educate their customers. So I love the education piece of it. And I was comfortable with doing that through open letter marketing, which it may have created a little bit, longer time to build the business up. But once we started to get a lot of people coming back and a lot of word of mouth, the company started to grow. And I did the same thing with a new software company called Invelo. Again, we talked to thousands of investors, and I see so many people spending hundreds, tens of thousands, even hundreds of thousands of dollars on a monthly basis for marketing. And when you really drill down into understanding their methodology or strategy behind their marketing, there wasn't much sophistication behind it. A lot of them would send the same exact product or marketing to every one of their prospects. I'm always looking at, well, you should really understand who your prospects are so you can categorize them or segment them into high, medium, and low quality prospects. So you can still keep the same marketing budget, but now your allocation of your budget is going to now shift more towards your higher quality, so that your ROI can theoretically increase if you're focused more on your higher quality prospects. So after talking to a lot of, you know, our customers and figuring out the needs, we started to work with software to figure out how we can provide not just a product. I don't look at Invelo as just a software product. It's really, we employ best practices and provide tons of education behind it, so people really understand how to build a business. And the education isn't about the software, it's how to build a better real estate investment business. So through best practices, and you can just utilize the tool to get you there. But it's pretty cool what we've built out. We're launching soon, depending on when this airs. We may have already launched, but that's what I've been really digging into and excited about the last couple of years.
That's awesome. Quick question on Invelo. Was there another company out there that was already doing what you conceptualized for this, but you just didn't think they were doing it well? Or was this just a complete blank need in the marketplace and you just didn't think anything like this existed?
The way that we're doing things is completely different than anybody else is doing it. There are many CRMs out there, and you'll see CRMs where, you know, a CRM can be focused. For real estate investors, most CRMs are either focused on one or the other. They're either focused on prospect management, where those are the people that you haven't reached out to, but you're starting to market to them. So they get into the nitty-gritty of like pulling lists, managing your prospects, sending out marketing, but they don't focus on they do call you back, going through the lead pipeline. Mm-hmm. And then you have other CRMs that really focus on the lead pipeline, but don't do anything with prospect segmentation, marketing, and all of that. So most investors are like fumbling around with multiple software platforms to get their whole sales pipeline. Mm-hmm. And what we've done is we've really spent a lot of time, and it's a huge undertaking. And I understand why most software companies don't do it, because usually you want to roll out an MVP in a small piece, and then you want to build out. But when you do it that way, it makes the system a little bit more clunky. But we've tackled, you know, the issue head on and said, we want to build out the full sales pipeline, to give everybody the one system. They can do everything under one roof, and make it extremely intuitive. So we spared like no expense on making sure we have the absolute best people, in the company, so we can create the features and, functionality that you need for each piece of the sales pipeline. And then because we have it all under one roof, the KPIs that we can provide are just like nothing else that other systems can provide. So we can tell you, like, you know, how long it takes you to convert to a certain part of your lead cycle, where there are gaps in your process. So we can do a lot of that stuff, like marketing, prospects, leads, deals, everything we can really identify.
So a couple of things jump out at me there, and it's funny because you, like, obviously you know the problem exists. You work with investors all the time, but even I'm thinking in our business, wholesaling and flipping that we're doing in Kentucky, it requires at minimum two separate tools. And it was like a clunky way to even get to those tools. We started out with Podio, kind of took the typical life cycle of someone that gets burned out with Podio and starts hating it, started hating it. Then we went to basically to the way you described it, a pre-lead tool just for texting, like leads and record, not even leads, just texting records and going outbound. And then what we have to do is move all those records once they become leads into another tool, a separate CRM, and then we nurture them there. So it's like, they're not always talking to each other. It's manual movement. It can be annoying. So it's really interesting to hear that you saw that problem, and yeah, clearly a lot of people have it and then solving for it. So really curious to like learn more about that. And, you know, would love to talk more about it when it comes out. And then the other thing that was really interesting to me that I struggled with when I was starting, and we have a lot of probably beginner wholesalers listening to the show still, or beginner flippers. And what I would find a lot of times is you'd buy a tool and without education, the tool is useless. It's like your car is useless if you don't know how to drive a car, you know? So like by packaging in education, it's like customer enablement, it's customer support, but basically ensuring that they can make money, they can keep using the tool. What does that look like in the business? Because a lot of wholesalers, like, you know, typically, or people that sell tech or software, they'll have that as like separate training courses that people can buy or masterminds. I don't know if it doesn't sound like you're doing it that way. It sounds like it's more kind of like part of your like inclusive of the tool, but can you just talk about how that looks? And, you know, again, if someone's considering it right now, they're considering a tool, but they're also looking for maybe education because they don't want to just buy a tool blindly and not know how to use it.
Right. Yeah. And I understand that like a lot of people will get on a platform and whether it's intuitive or not, they don't really understand how to use it, or maybe they don't realize how they need to use it in their business. So we put a huge focus on user onboarding. So we made sure like that we hired a specialist to make sure that it's understandable how people get into the platform and like what are the steps that are necessary to get somebody successful on the platform. And really like, let's get it down to under 10 steps. And how do we provide the guidance to get people through that like happy path? So that's like step one of how to get people successful on this is we've really outlined once somebody goes on, we have prompts, we show you what you need to do first. We have if different indicators, if we feel like you need to add more lists into the platform to get to your, you know, your target high quality, enough high quality prospects, like we show you that. So we're building in these best practices because a lot of people don't know what they don't know. So we want to show them like, here's how to prospect. And if they don't understand how to do that, we show them how to do that in the system. So that's one piece. But then the other two pieces are the education. So we have two different types of education. We have Envelo training, which myself and a number of other investors, we put together 5+ hours of like exactly how to go and become a real estate investor. So we talk about everything. And if anybody knows me, like I don't like to sugarcoat things. I don't like to put fluff in there. So I want the content to be executable. So when somebody sees or listens to these different courses, I want them to be like, I know exactly what I need to do and how to implement it. If I'm not doing that, and if they can't figure that out, so after I create these scripts, I'm asking other people in my office that might not know investing, 100% to say, does this make sense to you? So I'm trying to test it and make sure that I'm not, everybody can understand. But anyways, those 5 hours, I mean, they go through like how to pick your farm area, which list to pull, how to do segmentation, how to market, how to talk to sellers, how to negotiate, how to do deal analysis, everything. Mm-hmm. So they really have a good understanding. And then the second piece of education is we're bringing other industry professionals in, and they're creating masterclasses. And what those masterclasses are is a minimum of 1 hour course, but we break it up into smaller pieces. And they're talking about a very specific focused topic to really get into depth on that. And it could be mindset. It could be talking about deal analysis. We have people talking about like cash flow, how to make sure that you have proper cash flow, because that's a big thing. Like you talk to a lot of investors and even the successful ones, in a particular month, they could be like, dude, I have no money. Like, I ran out of money. It's all in my deals. But managing cash flow is like a critical aspect to making sure that you can, you know, properly fund new deals, your marketing, all that stuff. So we're doing full gamut, like tax accounting. Like, we're trying to cover a lot of the different pieces that, again, are focused on helping people create a really strong business. And then we're just kind of including in like how you can utilize Envelo to run your business this way. So we're focused on training for real estate investors, but then feeding in how the software can help you out with that.
Yeah, that just sounds really cool. I mean, again, it's covering a lot of those needs that people struggle with, or that they use a tool for a week and then they say it doesn't work, but they didn't really use it. They didn't really work it, or just didn't understand like how it can apply to their business. So that's really cool. I'm sure this is in there, but just because we're on a podcast and just because, you know, not everyone is going to go there, I got to ask this question. You talk to so many beginner investors or so many investors in general that come on, start using your platforms. I would love if we could do maybe like a mock scenario of, let's say I'm a brand new wholesaler. And like I had a gun to my head and I had to make money in my first year of wholesaling. You know, like what if you were coaching me and I was brand new and I had, let's say 6 months to 12 months to make money in wholesaling, you know, like what could be some of the steps, or what would you recommend if you were coaching me to kind of get onboarded of like the nuts and bolts and like, how can we get to revenue?
How much money do you have?
That's a great question. Okay. We'll go like middle ground. We'll say like I got $7,000.
$7,000. Okay. $7,000, 6 months.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So the first thing is you got to figure out what market you want to be in. Right. So the big thing there is when I look at markets, I want to make sure that we're not in highly competitive areas, but not right now with this market, it's hard to do that. So I always try to look at like fringe markets where, you know, a lot of investors will be focused on a certain area, but as you start to go out into maybe the not so great areas, I don't want to be in the terrible areas, but I want to be in like the fringe, because your competition is going to be a little bit less. So your opportunity to get deals will increase over the really competitive areas. So I'd first look at a fringe area. And then I would start figuring out, okay, I'd start to pull lists, right? So, I start to identify the different lists that I have to pull. And I mean, I can talk about each area in depth a long time, but I'll just kind of highlight over the lists. The lists I pull, like your general lists, you know, that you can pull through ListSource or with Envelo. But I'd also get like some niche lists. So I'd drive for dollars, I'd get tax liens, I'd get all those. And then I'd probably mix it up with either cold calling and some marketing as well, like direct mail. I'm cautious to recommend text messaging and ringless voicemail just due to all the regulations. While a lot of investors still do it, I'm a little bit cautious on telling people to go out and do that unless they feel really comfortable with, you know, accepting any kind of fees that come back to them. But I would mix in kind of direct mail as well as cold calling onto that. Mm-hmm. From there, if they wanted to, depending on the responses, if they do door knocking and whatnot, but that's primarily where I would focus. And I'll also start with networking, talking to other investors, finding out who's there, who's buying properties. They might have properties that they can't take on, letting people know that you're in and, you know, purchasing in that area. So I would say those are the top things. When we, I had a coaching program for a few years, and that's pretty much how we've kind of laid it out for everyone. Mm-hmm. Now, we would layer in like text messaging and ringless voicemail for them. And generally, it takes about 3 to 4 months, given that with that strategy that we've been seeing, to get your first deal. Mm-hmm. So 3 to 4 months of active marketing, and most of our students were getting their first deal right off the bat. So that's typically how long we see it. So really from beginning to end, it's probably like 4 to 5 months after you're building your list and then you start marketing. That's pretty much right where we see people getting deals.
Gotcha. That was going to be my next question, just timeline. Because I, you know, like, I think we're all impatient to some degree, but I think it like patience and impatience to me, it just comes down to expectations, you know? So I can be as patient as I, you know, need to be if I have some ballpark of the idea, but I think a lot of people it's good and bad. It's unfortunate though, in some cases where, you know, people, they see something on TikTok or Instagram or just you know, someone teaching a course and they think they can, with a high likelihood, get their first wholesale deal in like a month. And, you know, then I think that just leads to much higher chances of quitting. But 3 to 4 months, I, like, again, you have more experience with this than me, but that's about how long it took us to get our first deal. And then from there we had momentum, but, you know, I think we would have probably been more burned out and like prone to quitting if we thought it was going to take a month and it took three or four, because it's just like, we're not getting anywhere, but it takes time. You have to, like, you know, nurture leads. You have to tinker and talk to people and learn things.
Yeah. And that's probably one of the biggest things that makes, you know, newbie investors like quit is because of they're not managing their expectations. So as part of the courses, we really focus on mindset and to provide that expectation. And that's primarily why, like, a lot of this software that we've created is for beginner investors, but it's really targeted for people that have done a few deals and are looking to scale their business. So we specifically targeted with our plans, like, to have a free plan. So we have a free plan to get onto the platform. And we did that because I only want to provide, I want people to be able to use the program, but I want them to get into the education. I want them to learn. So they have access to the, you know, the training that we have, so they can figure out, all right, does this make sense for me? If it is, great. And they can move on with Envelo or their investment business. Or if they don't think it's for them, then they don't have to move forward with it. But the biggest thing for us is to get them in so they can go through the training and make sure that their expectations are in line and that it all makes sense for their lifestyle and what they want to do.
Cool. All right. So switching gears here a little bit, I have a couple, I would say, selfish questions, but they'll help some people too. But it's more now like shifting to the business side. We've gotten more questions too about this. I think as people have kind of like grown with some of the stuff that we've done, and even like people, not to knock bigger pockets, but maybe like they've outgrown the learning of how to buy a house and how to flip a house. Like, you know, it's just a series of steps, but I feel like the business side of it is a lot less discussed. Things like hiring employees and operations and compensating employees and, you know, like managing cash flow, to your point. So when you think about, you know, like taking on a new project, like, I'm just curious, for the software business, you know, what was your mindset of, okay, who do we need to build this? Are we going to build it in-house? Are we going to outsource it? You know, how do we go about budgeting for something like this? Is it your money that you're using? Are you raising money? I know this is like 12 questions in one, but just, you know, kind of a mind dump here, but just, you know, kind of your thought process at the beginning, because it's a big undertaking and you know, you've been able to execute it.
Right. The first question that I asked myself is, do I have the time to focus on this while I'm running open letter marketing? So the first thing was just to make sure that I had somebody else in open letter marketing that could manage the day-to-day so that I could take my time to focus on something else. Because if I had to focus on open letter marketing while creating this new business, I would lack on both sides and both companies would be really impacted. So that was step one, is even if I had the resources and time to do that. Luckily, I have someone that backfilled me, manages the day-to-day. So I don't really do too much at open letter marketing on day-to-day type stuff. So I knew that I had the time to do it. And then, you know, this is a learning process for me. I didn't know anything about software. Like, I love technology, but I was not a developer at all. So trying to figure out how to create this, we started out with an MVP platform. So I went out and looked for consultants to help me build this. So
for those who don't know, can you just say what an MVP is?
Yeah, minimum viable product. Mm-hmm. So it's really like, you know, a watered down version of the software that you actually want to build to test it in the market to see if it, you know, people are receptive to it. And if they aren't, then you know you might have to shift gears or do something different. But if it is, then you know you have a good product. And then you can work on kind of your complete product that you want to push out to the market. So we went through the MVP and we I outsourced to a company offshore, and we worked with them for about, I think, 8 months before it actually went live. It went live. I got really good traction. We got a ton of feedback. And then at that point in time, I realized that I wanted to go much bigger than I originally intended. And I didn't really. And so at this point, Open Letter was funding Invelo. So I knew I wanted to go much bigger. And I knew if I went much bigger, I needed to work with really good people to make sure that the platform works amazingly well and is extremely intuitive. So I didn't really know where the budget, I kind of guessed at where the budget would be. We're well over that budget. But it was really, you know, talking to people, asking who they knew. I actually used this website called clarity.fm. And I love the website because I found my product manager there. And for those that don't know, clarity.fm is where you can hire people by the minute.
I've used this. I thought that's what this was. I have used this.
Oh, really? Okay. Have you? Yeah. I mean, it was great. Like I was trying to figure out like who I could, for me, where I am, like, luckily with the success of Open Letter Marketing, I had more money to work with. So I could work with really experienced people. So I was trying to just find these people because I had no idea where to go. And then one of my friends told me about clarity.fm. So I found this guy that started like 5 SaaS companies and sold one of them for like $150 million. And I was like, all right, I want to talk to this guy. So we started chatting and he's like, yeah, he's like, this project sounds like really cool. And he's like, and I'm just kind of figuring out what I want to do next and what project I want to get involved in. He's like, would you have an interest in me like coming on? And I was like, absolutely. So once he came on, he really helped to, you know, solidify a lot of the questions that I had and find the right team members that we needed, like between developers and, you know, customer success people. So he really helped to formalize everything and just take the, you know, the approach of just me asking him questions. He was like my, he was managing all those aspects. So between the both of us working on this, you know, we found absolutely amazing people. And right now with hiring, it's very difficult to hire. You know, the job market is challenging to find extremely good people. So it was taking a little bit longer, but we found such an amazing team that we have right now. And and that's kind of how it got built out. Open Letter Marketing is still funding the project. Mm-hmm. So we're lucky on that side that we didn't need to take on any external funding on it. But yeah, we've built it to this part and we're launching beta in a couple of weeks, which is really exciting.
Dude, that story is just awesome. Like the fact that I imagine the trajectory completely changed when you got this guy involved.
Oh, tremendously. Yeah. It's absolutely amazing. And It's funny because, you know, I'm paying him like a salary, right? But I told him, I was like, I want to give you equity. Like, I need to give you equity. You have done so much for this business. Even it hasn't launched yet. The amount of like traction and interest that we have from, you know, people that we've talked to is just absolutely amazing. But where we are today, we would never get there without him. So, it's something that, you know, it's really important for me to make sure that I'm, you know, treating all my team members like I would want to be treated. And if they're providing tremendous value, be able to do these sort of things with them, because, you know, each one of my team members, everyone has such a critical role. So if we have, you know, a weak team member, it's going to really affect the product. And everybody is just, you know, absolutely amazing.
What there's so many cool things with that, but the main thing that I take from that is, well, you assessed one, do you have more time or money? You have more money. Yes. So you can buy your way into circles. You could buy your way into education and you can fast track that kind of trade, you know, with just the way that business works. And you like got around someone that did the thing. They like, you're an expert in a lot of things. You recognize that this was an area that was new for you. Like we can't be experts in everything, but by teaming up with someone like that, you know, just hearing it, it fast tracked the process. And now he's got relationships, you know, he's done this mm-hmm. before. That just sounds so exciting to have someone like that yeah. in your corner and like, you know, what the project can then turn into. One question I had just from before that, and then definitely more after you mentioned that, is like the concept of like teams. You know, it sounds like you hired a team to build this and you have teams. Mm-hmm. I know with Open Letter Marketing, I've talked to some of them also, but you know, how do you debate or like consider hiring freelancers versus someone that you're just going to hire full-time? A lot of people in our community, they come from the world of virtual assistants, which is a big step for them. But then even beyond that, they're really not sure if they're going to have enough work for a full-time employee. And then that's an expense and they're just not sure how to handle that. So any thought process that you kind of go through with that, or how you thought about, you know, like bringing on a full team and, you know, how you're going to go full-time over part-time?
Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, in that question, but for me, most everyone at Open Letter Marketing is an employee. When I started with the software company, I was hiring, you know, consultants, and we still do have a number of consultants that we work with, but I learned very quickly that hiring people and having employees, especially in the development side, the product that you get from in-house people is astronomically better. Like they think through the product, they come up with new ideas. A lot of the times when you're hiring like offshore people, what I found is like they'll get to the end product, but they'll, you know, they won't think through a lot of things. So you'll give them a task and they'll just go to code it. They won't think about, oh, what about these different use cases? How can we make this a little bit more intuitive? And, you know, that's challenging. So when you get into the product and you try to change things around, it becomes more challenging that way. And once we started to shift over to have in-house developers and employees, the product, you know, came around so much more. And, you know, new things that I didn't even think about that our developers like, hey, how would this work? And I was like, dude, that one feature right there is like a showstopper that I didn't even think about, but that's absolutely amazing. So you have these conversations that are like so exciting. And it's funny, like every day, I was just telling my wife last night, I was like, I'm excited to come to work. Like every morning, I'm like, I can't wait to get in because there's always new stuff that's happening. I love the team that we're working with. So for me, I always hire in-house. I don't really hire many virtual assistants anymore. To your point about when people are starting out, one of the biggest things that I said that I always learned from was I didn't hire fast enough. Because when I remember when I started, especially in real estate and starting Open Letter Marketing, I was doing everything and I was concerned that one, now I have to give some profit to somebody else. And that was scary to me. Two, are they really gonna do the job better than I did? And then three, like I have to trust that they're gonna do what they say that they're gonna do. So those three things held me back, and I'm sure hold a lot of people back on making that first hire. But once I got around and pushed that out of my mind and hired that first person, I look back after 6 months and I was like, how did I do this by myself? It's crazy. So I always remember that when I'm thinking about hiring, but I'm a little bit nervous, and I just hire somebody. I just get past the fear and I say, if I'm thinking about that, I need to hire somebody, just hire them before you get scared. And every single time I've done that, it's always worked out extremely well and helped the company grow dramatically. So our growth is directly related to the people that we have here. And the ability to make sure that we're hiring and staffing properly.
Totally. So. Yeah. And something that we've found in hiring people is they find actually kind of like the developer thing. They find issues that we would never have found because they're coming in with almost like a fresh perspective. They don't see the same thing that you've been looking at every day. And they'll ask questions that haven't been asked before, even if they stay or don't stay. A lot of times they can push projects forward. What we found just by asking those type of questions and putting fresh eyes on something, hopefully then they can drive it forward if they're good at it. But yeah, to that point, that's, you know, it's like a common, it's like that, like loop of like, you know, entrepreneurs and like people that start stuff. One just very specific question, again, like I'm thinking through some of the questions that I've had, and I've seen people post in like some of our groups of like hiring, mm-hmm. like getting over each level of hurdle. And, you know, you mentioned it before of like, you didn't want to give away profits, or in some cases, people, you know, they're hiring salespeople and they're trying to figure out how to pay them, or they're not sure if they should do a profit share, or give away equity. And again, a lot of this stuff is not taught. It's all kind of like new stuff. Do you have any thoughts about, you know, how to comp people, how to incent people, but also, you know, do it in a way that you don't end up resenting yourself or giving away too much of something?
Yeah. Yeah. It all depends on the role, right? If it's sales versus admin versus developer or whatnot. I always like salary other than sales. So salespeople, definitely commission structure is going to be much more appealing for them. But for everyone else, I always try to do salary. I never come out right away with profit sharing or anything like that. When I hire somebody, usually I'm, you know, my product manager will interview them. Then my VP will interview them, and they're really good at identifying, are they a good fit for the position? But more importantly, are they a good fit for the culture? That's the biggest piece of the equation for us, is we assess based on culture. So we want to make sure that they're a very positive person. They look at personal development. They're always developing themselves personally and professionally. Like, those are all big things for us. So we always look for that first. But I try to always go the salary route. And for me, when somebody comes in here and I make sure that I don't always look for like a budget person anymore, because, you know, I tried that for a while. I try to like, you know, I can only afford this, so let's put it out there. And you realize that you're going to get somebody that, you know, may not think as much as you want them to. And that's, I always want to look at people and be like, I want you to ask questions. I want you to come up with ideas. I want you to, like, everyone should be their own CEO of their position. That's how I look at everyone. There's no hierarchy in the company, meaning everyone is just as important as anyone else. I have a job and responsibility just like you do. If somebody in marketing, I need to figure out something in marketing, I go to my marketing person and ask them about something. So I make sure that I don't try to cut the budget and reduce the quality of the candidate. Mm-hmm. I always want to make sure I really pay well. And people are going to be like, well, man, that's another $15,000 a year. Yeah, it's another $15,000 a year on top of like maybe a budget, but the quality of work that you're going to get from them, like, that's going to boost you so much more than that. The return, the ROI on the $15,000 is absolutely amazing. So we've been very much focused on that piece, is don't try to cut ourselves down, pay, you know, a little bit more, so we get really quality people and people that are passionate about what they do. Because the value that you get from those people that are excited about what they're doing, man, the you know, the deliverables and what they come up with is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. So we've been very focused on only hiring those people that meet that criteria.
That's really cool. Yeah. I love how you break it down for each, and yeah, just understanding that, or talking about how it's not an expense, it's an investment. And in theory, it should, you know, have a yield on the cost. It's not, yep, you know, a sunk cost that, you know, it's not like a car or, you know, like a computer, you know, whatever, you know what I mean? But like, yep, if you're using them effectively, they're going to make a return for you. So that's really cool. I have one last question before we go to like social media and talk about how people can get in touch with you. I think I know the answer a little bit from what you said before, but at this point, I'm curious, what drives you? You know, it seems like financially you're doing great. The business is running, but, you know, you're starting a new company, you're starting a new project, you're jumping into stuff, you're coming on a podcast like this. You know, what's like giving you a drive at this point? What gets you excited?
I think educating people. I really feel like that's kind of one of the most exciting pieces, is being able to take my experiences and other experiences through like customers and whatnot, and share that with people and helping others create better businesses. You know, when I got started, nobody really starts alone. When you build a company, you're always relying on other people through learning and, you know, other people's experience. So that's like the biggest piece for me. I absolutely love doing that. And every single like new business or project that I take on, that's where it's coming from. Like, how can we fill a void in the market to help people get, you know, become more successful? And however success is spelled out for them, that's what I want them to reach. So Invelo has just been like such a passion for me because how much education there is behind it and what a new product this is to the market that I know is going to solve so many problems that people have. The feeling that other people can grow their businesses because of this product is just like so exciting. So that's really what it is for me.
That's cool. All right, man. Well, yeah. That's a good reason to do it. What's the best way for people to get in touch, check out the product, check you out on social media, or, you know, reach out?
Yeah. So they can feel free to shoot me an email at justin@inveloapp.com. They can check out Invelo at inveloapp.com. And then also openlettermarketing.com for my marketing business. Mm-hmm. But yeah, they can feel free to shoot me an email or check those websites out.
You're not going to drop the TikTok? I'm surprised.
I have not done anything on TikTok. I'm just fascinated by it, but I have not gotten into social media like I should be. Every day I'm like, I should get into it today, but it kind of gets put on the back burner.
Yeah. Could be one of those things that gets hired out and blows up, you know?
Yeah.
But exactly. Totally. Well, Justin, thank you again for coming on, man. Best of luck with the project. We'll post it along with the episode when it goes live, and always great catching up.
Yeah, you too. I appreciate it. Thanks so much, man.
All right. See ya.
Hey, you millennial millionaire. Are you looking for help getting to the next level in real estate? Are you looking for accountability and strategy to achieve your goals? If so, Jonathan is now taking on one-on-one students and opening a few spots in his private mastermind. It's affordable and welcome to everyone. If you had any questions or think you may need a boost, send Jonathan a message on Facebook or email at johnjfarber@outlook.com.